So yeah, the Gemara on Vav Amud Beis. Let's take a volunteer to break us into the sugya here. Shmuel, do you want to get us started, or you'd rather not?
Rather not.
Rather not. Okay, who wants to get us started? Dov? So start with Hanu Beitre.
Hanu Beitre, Hanu Beitre. Hanu Beitre, Hanu Beitre.
You have people who are living in a
shared house. Louder, two people living in a shared house with one on top of the other, and in some form, the top one ends up between the bottom one.
Okay, good. So we have what the Gemara usually calls a bias and an aliyah. Right? So you have a house, and then you have an upstairs. Now, we could just think of this as like an apartment building type scenario where the two residents are neighbors, not horizontally, but vertically, right? So one lives downstairs and one lives upstairs. That's the Hanu Trei Davidairi, Chad Avidairi Loi, Chad Avidairi Tatoi. One was on top, one was on bottom. Okay, and then what happened, Dov?
So Itvar Tatoi.
Yeah, so what's this Itvar Tatoi? What does that mean? What's Rashi's interpretation of that?
Seems to be that sort of started sinking in.
Yeah, so what? Read Rashi. Nitvu.
Nitvu atol hatachtor ba'aretz ad sheh shofa tzikras ha'aliyah v'nin ha'kach v'yachol v'nin zohol alam keina.
So what happened?
The foundation was sort of sinking in the ground at the point where the bottom guy can get into his house, then that sort of bends down or rolls in.
Yeah, so it's pictorially, you could think of this as originally the ground was down here, then the walls, I guess, sank into the ground. So the lower part, the tatoi, shrank. Right? The height of the bottom unit gets smaller. Right? That's how Rashi seems to understand it. How does the Rambam... And Rashi says such that the guy at bottom has to bend down when he gets into his house. Right? How does Ram understand the facts?
The top one starts collapsing inwards, loosening, and the ceiling essentially starts falling, moving downwards.
Yeah, so the Rambam seems to be the case. It's not that these beams sink into the ground, but the floor that divided the properties, I guess, caved in a little bit. Is that right? So I guess the idea is that, let's say these beams began to bend. So at time T1, this is where the roof was. But at this is the time T2, let's say the beam sagged down to here. So either way, both according to the Rambam and according to the Rashi, the bias on bottom gets smaller. Okay? So let's go back to the Gemara. So what's the legal issue at bar here?
So on our way, I don't have any issue.
Yeah, so the guy on top's a bit of a jerk, right? He says, look, I'm living fine. My unit is not affected. The issue is your bias, not my responsibility to accommodate you, right? And the guy on bottom has all these solutions at hand. What are his solutions?
I will break down and build it on my own.
Yeah, so I'll take care of it, right? It's on my bill, and I'll see to the construction. Where's the guy on top respond?
Please, we don't elevate them. I don't have anywhere else to stay.
Yeah, I have nowhere to go in the interim. Okay, so the guy on bottom, ever the gracious gentleman.
I'll rent you a place.
Yeah, I'll find you a nice hotel to stay in for the time being. And what does the guy on top respond?
I'm going to lay look around. It's annoying.
Yeah, why should I have to move out to a hotel? This is I have my house is fine, you're the one with the problem, I don't have to accommodate you. Well, so the guy in bottom says, lo ka miser, the guy in bottom saying, I can't live, right? I'm stuck, I have no place to reside. And the guy on top says, yeah, what's the shufa kresach, the ul, the shufa kresach hupuk?
He's going to rebellion in the fall and an apple.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, your house sat down, but you do have a place to live. You could continue to live here, even if it's just a crawl space. Right? It's like soldiers on a submarine have to, like, squeeze into these tiny compartments. So you too, chaval, that your house is a little smaller, but wiggle and get on your belly and get into the house, get on your belly and get out of the house. You could still live there. Okay? So tell us for Rabbi Chama.
Everything
you
said is justified.
Yeah, so the law upholds the position of the guy on top, meaning the guy on bottom has no legal recourse against the guy on top. Now the question for us is, why should that be, right? It's kind of strange. The guy on bottom, his house is restricted by the falling roof or the sagging floor, by the sagging walls. He definitely has less space. But the guy on top argues, well, you could still use your house for shelter if you crawl in and crawl out. So is that a good argument? Like, why should that, like, the standard for a habitable home be so narrow? Like, as long as you could wiggle in and out of the door, that's considered a base dira, right? And then the Gemara says, yeah, that's the bedina with the kamake bale. That's what the halacha actually holds. So how do we make sense of this? So I just want to call your attention to an interesting Rabbeinu Gershom that I added at the last moment. Anybody see Rabbeinu Gershom on Daf Zayin? Take a look at this. Shuvah Kreislach Ol, what does he say? Yeah, so what does that mean? Yes, the guy on top says, look, this is all your mazel issue. It's got nothing to do with me, so tough luck on you. I'm sorry, but it's not my responsibility to accommodate you. Now remember, the guy on top would be displaced in order to accommodate the guy on bottom. So he doesn't have to do that. He's saying, it's all your mazel, Mr. Downstairs, not my responsibility. Now look at this next line. What do you guys think this line? Chafor ba'aretz ukfof bitnecha vitzei vihikanes. Dina ka'amarle divituch shelo yivne. What's that? Oh, this is a very novel argument by Rabbeinu Gershom. Zilti?
He's not doing what he can in order to help the situation. Like, he didn't dig into the ground, why should he get in?
Yeah. So it sounds like the argument of Rabbeinu Gershom, which the other Rishonim don't really suggest, is that the guy on top says to the guy on bottom, why don't you just dig down into the ground? You could get more space that way. You'll have a normal sized home if you dig up below ground. And, you know, yeah, it'll be hard for you to get in, but you can always bend down as you get into your home. So it actually sounds from being a Gershom, I would say this is the most accommodating view to the guy downstairs, is that it presupposes that there's a remedy at hand to the tatoi, to the person downstairs, that he could always dig deeper, a deeper foundation. Yes, it's a nuisance to get in and out, but that's partially why the guy on top doesn't have to vacate to accommodate the guy on bottom. Okay? But I don't think that's a standard view in the Rishonim. Did anybody get that sense from the other Rishonim? No. It sounds like the guy on bottom just like has to be stuck with a tiny, tiny compartment. Okay? So we want to figure out what's that about. So the Gemara does say there is a limit at which point the guy on bottom has recourse to vacate the guy on top. So what's that limit when suddenly the guy on bottom has the right to evict the guy on top? Yeah, so if the bias on bottom becomes less than, so if it's less than 10 tefachim, what happens then? Good. So less than 10 tefachim, the guy on bottom has some recourse to evict the guy on top. But why is 10 tefachim the standard? Remember, 10 tefachim is very low, correct? 10 tefachim is about 10 hand breadths, exactly 10 hand breadths. Right? So that's not very high. How is that? Like this tall around, maybe? Lower even? So why is 10 tefachim the shear? And more significantly, what's the legal argument
is what Dove left unanswered intentionally. What's the legal argument that suddenly, once the bias on bottom is limited to less than 10 fucking, suddenly he's in the right and could compel the guy on top to vacate? So what's the basis for this? Does anybody have a thought on this? Josh?
The simplest answer would probably be that he has a right to within those 10 fucking, meaning he owns that airspace or whatever, and when the other person is in it, it's as if he was like a mazik, because this is my property and you're, I think that's the simplest.
Okay, so Josh tells us that one way of conceptualizing the tapoy's right in this case is through the framework of nizigin. If the bias on bottom is limited to less than 10 fucking, the Baal HaElyon is considered a mazik to the Baal HaTachton. He's now, let's say, intruding upon his space. And when someone's mazik you, you have the right to expel them. Yes? That's one way of conceptualizing. And so the thought is that somehow he's only considered a mazik once he gets within 10 fucking. Yes? Okay, what's another way of thinking about this without appealing to nezek? And I'll just point out, the Nezikin argument might be a little tricky because it's not really clear that it's the fault of the guy on top, especially if you take Rashi's reading, that it's just the beams that are being absorbed by the ground. So what's another way of thinking about this, Zolti? Yeah, that's good. Again, like we saw in Hezek Ria type discussions, that what's going on here is really a Shchinim issue. What does that mean that it's a Shchinim issue? We're trying to figure out what are the rules of partners who jointly own an apartment building. Guy lives upstairs, guy lives downstairs. And we're just trying to manage the rights and duties between these two neighbors. Okay? So it's not that one of them is harming the other one. What we're really just trying to do is figure out the best way to accommodate both of their interests. Okay? So let's think about this from a non-Nezek lens for a second. What was the Gemara's rationale for why if the tatoi, the guy in bottom, is limited to less than 10 fucking, he finally could evacuate or evict the guy on top? What did the Gemara say? Ned, do you remember what the Gemara said?
It's your should.
Okay, so one thing is the Gemara says, Lamata miyud is reshusa didi. That within 10 tefachim, that's definitely the reshus of the guy downstairs. Okay, so what's that? What type of argument is that? And what type of argument is that?
The right. It's a right not to subject his property to maintain the other person's property.
Just plus that, what does reshus of the deed mean? Yeah, so it's the reshus of the guy downstairs.
Yeah.
And why, what does that explain?
Therefore, he doesn't need to use his reshut to maintain the other person's well-being.
Yeah. So I'd say, you added a little too much, I would say, but meaning, the guy, what's the argument of the guy upstairs? Why should he have to lose his reshus?
Yeah.
Right? Why should I have to vacate my reshus to accommodate your construction? The argument of the guy downstairs, once he's limited to less than 10 tefachim, it's the same. Right? I've already lost my own reshus when the building sunk into the ground. So in the same way that you're claiming that you have a right to stay in your aliyah, I'm saying I have a right to keep my 10 tefachim, and your bias is now intruding on my 10 tefachim. Yes? Yeah. So that's one component of the Gemara's argument. And what's the second thing you mentioned, Ned, that's also in there? Yes, what does that mean? Yeah. So what is... So, you see, this... What does V'lo Mishabedlach mean? So Ned says, the question here is, do I have to lose usage of my property to ensure your usage of your property? Right? This is what most of the Shchinim issues in Bava Basra are about. Right? Am I allowed to use my property in a way that's going to limit your usage of yours? So if I could look around everywhere in my property, if I could have a bathroom in my property, if I could have a smokestack in my property, That's going to limit the use of yours. So the argument here is that under 10 tefachim, not only is it my reshus, but it's exclusively my reshus, such that I'm not obligated to use that part of what's mine to support what's yours. Ready to see that? So there's really two separate ideas baked into the Gemara's response. Number one, less than 10 tefachim is my living space, which you could say is a value on its own. I'm not obligated to forego my residential unit so that you could have yours. And more than that, it's exclusively mine, such that it's not indebted or secured to uphold your rishus. Everybody see that? So I want to examine a little bit of the tension between these two points. The Gemara has both of them. Well, not to be good, rishus and yikid, who below mishapi. Okay, next.
What's pushing you to
view them
as two separate elements?
Yeah. So why am I viewing them as separate ideas?
Yeah.
Because one argument is that this is my reshus and I'm entitled to have 10 tefachim of living quarters. The second argument is that this part of my reshus is not obligated, or is not meshubad to your reshus.
Can't you just say that? First half of the sentence is just establish the fact that it's your property and your property, you don't have to use your property to support someone else's property.
Well, I think some parts of your property you might. So, for example, here where the upstairs unit is dependent on the downstairs unit, it's clear that the hatoy is meshuba to the iloi. But the Gemara is saying, no. Once you get to below 10 fucking, that part is not meshuba. Right? So there's going to be two separate points. A, that it's it's diminishing my property usage. Second of all, this part of my property is not meshuba to supporting your structure. So basically that? Yes? Okay. So we're going to come back to that in a second. Yeah, Zolti?
When we talk about the reshus adidibu, is that also a way of saying that like because your floor or whatever is so low, you're now officially in my reshus in the sense that you're in my airspace, like your property to actually do that. I mean, that's like a different way of...
Yeah, I think that's one way of interpreting reshus adidibu, right? And you're actually trespassing on my quarters now.
Right.
Would you view that as a Nezek type argument? Is that what you're saying? Or like a Geneva type theory?
Yeah, it's more Geneva,
yeah. Maybe even Geneva is a better way to go. If you want to view that as different from Nezek, the idea is that you're inside my Rishus at less than 10 tefachim. So actually, if you look at some of the Achronim here, I'm just going to fast forward ahead for a second. Here. The Chazon Ish speaks in terms of Chashiv HaElyon Mazik. Right, maybe you could view the guy on top as a Mazik. That's a Nezikin-based theory. But does anybody remember which Rishon here used maybe a Geneva-type paradigm that you're trespassing on my Rishus and I could expel you? Anybody remember where that came up? So if you look at the... possibly, so I think maybe the best formulation of that was the Rid, although maybe it's not. Well, yeah. So I think the Rid had a formulation like that, but I think the Meiri also did. So, Im Kain Kishenechbas Kulo Yomer Lo Birshusi Ata Omed. Is that like you're standing now in my reshus when it sinks below this level. Maybe that's one formulation. And again, over here, im yordu etochas ara tefachim areza reshus bal habayis. But I guess that's not a clear language of a trespass. Right, Dolti, you want something stronger than that?
I mean, I think.
Or here in the Ritz formulation, it's kol imata me'asara reshusa ditatahu v'yocha lomar lo salei kol rosecha me'alai. Right, take away your beams from my domain. That sounds like a, remove the trespass type argument. Yeah, that. So maybe the Pisgah Rid falls nicely within the Geneva trespass idea.
Is that different from Mazik?
It's hard to know. It's very hard to know where Geneva and Ezekiel separate from each other. But you might say that a trespass is a type of theft without it being Nezek, arguably. Although in this case, the two are very similar because you're taking away his usage. You're not just trespassing, you're taking away his usage of the thing at the same time. So maybe that language helps out Zolti's point. I would also point you to but the Chazanish, I would just say, is clearly a Mazik and Nezek theory, which we'll come back to at the end. Okay? Very good at that so far? Okay, so let's go back to the Gemara. The Gemara said 10 tefachim is the cutoff line. Okay? So that's one possibility. But then the Gemara says, "V'hani mili delo asnu gabi hadadi." So we'll come back to that. But why should 10 tefachim be the cutoff line? Anybody? Zolti?
Well, I'm just assuming it's the same thing with like
yeah, so maybe like 10 tefachim. Okay. So you want to say that maybe the significance of 10 tefachim is that that's the minimum standard of a bias.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, so let's try to figure out the significance here. So you're saying the minimum type of place to live is 10 tefachim high. Okay? What would that suggest? All right.
Sorry, I think that as long as you can say that you have a place to live, both parties don't owe each other anything. But once the final bias can say, hey, I don't have a derail anymore, I don't have a bias, we have to rebuild, then it's more analogous, let's say, you know, in the classic bias in the case where let's say the whole thing falls down, they both have to rebuild. They both force each other to rebuild the thing. So once kind of the final bias says, well, I don't in any sense have a shame bias right now, you can demand that.
Yeah, although I would say it could be that you're only mazik him. You're saying if you're mazik him, then...
I mean, it makes sense that...
You guys hot or cold or... What? Do you want the window open or closed? I can close the window.
No, it's okay.
What? Oh, yeah? We'll open it for 2 minutes and we'll be freezing and then we'll close it. That's the only way to do it here.
This heater is
on. You can shut it off if you want.
Nah.
What?
I'm fine with it on.
Okay. So we're doing the worst thing possible for the environment, right? Like a heater on with the window open. You're not worried about it, Zolti?
I'm okay with it. Doesn't matter.
Yes, Chaya.
Yeah, no, so backing up to intuition. Like forcing the area, I assume like, you know, the whole airspace, the whole house is his, and if you think it's mazik, so once any amount of mazik is mazik, however, if you think that the demand benchmark is, no, the five qualified needs to not have a house, then maybe
you'll
go for stuff that's more like objective
sheer. Maybe. Hold that thought for a minute, because I don't want to pull us back in that direction here. But so one possibility is that the shame bias just requires 10 fucking. But that seems very forced, right? Because it's not obvious. Like, what does that mean? So, like, you buy a mansion, and if the thing is limited to, you know, anything but 11 fucking, like, you still have your man. Like, it just seems... The invasion of your property right is the same whether or not you satisfy the formality of a house, right? So what's the way to make sense of that? Hey, Don?
I'm just saying less than 10, fewer than 10, you just can't crawl anymore, and then the argument, the person's argument of the other doesn't make sense.
Right, but why is the argument, let's take a step backwards, why does the Baal HaAliyah have the right to say, you downstairs, so long as you have 11 tefachim, 10 tefachim, you know, your residential unit is not violated.
She's still able to move around.
Okay, that's all saying. I would say, like, oh, the shame body is, like, formally speaking, you still have a living quarters, right? I haven't deprived you of a place to live. Right? As long as you have a bench with a roof over it, your bias is intact. For me?
You could also just say you never had a right to have stuff in the first place.
But yeah.
It doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily giving the first answer, but...
Yeah, so say a little more, Romy. You're saying that the guy downstairs...
I mean, we're bothered by it. We keep being bothered by the fact that how could I intrude at all, and the answer is maybe he's not intruding.
Yeah. Why is he not intruding? I think it's how you spell deed. How do you spell deed?
Yeah.
Yeah. So meaning, what was the deed of the guy downstairs? What was his property right in the first place? We have to know what his initial right was to determine whether his right was invaded. Right? So,
I guess one way of saying this is he had a right to a shame bias. He still has a shame bias so long as he has 10 tefachim, right? That's the intuition behind that first comment. But the second argument is to say, well, maybe the guy downstairs only had a limited property right in the first instance. What would be the reason to say that? So the Meiri really helps us with this. What does the Meiri say? Quoting the Chachmei HaTzarfatim, who wants to tell us the Meiri's position? Zecharia?
So he raised a question from the Frenchies, and he says that...
The French wise men. Yeah.
And he says that I read it, the Kulo threw me off a little bit, but it sounds like he's saying any amount of dissent should be a violation of his airspace. So, because the Balali can say, listen, wherever my aliyah is, So that's what they raise in the question. So really, even before 10 Tefachim should be a problem.
Yeah, so the Chachmei HaTzarfatim say, look, when you and I inherit this this unit, this two-apartment unit, and I say, I'll say Josh and I inherit it. I say, Josh, you take the top floor, I take the down floor, the downstairs. What? Like, how are we splitting it? So clearly our intention is that Josh gets everything from the floor and above, right? And I get everything in the shaded area over here, meaning from the floor and below. That statement itself is ambiguous, right? But it means the airspace of this geometrical spatial unit, as it was at the moment of Chalukah. Yes? Yeah? Okay. So therefore, what follows from that? So let's say at the moment of Chalukah, the downstairs is 20 amos tall, right? So that means my entitlement as the downstairs owner is to have 20 amos of airspace. Any infringement on those 20 amos is already a violation of my property, right? That's already reshusa dd. And if Josh's floor diminishes my 20 amos, then I have a right to evict him and to rebuild the entire unit. Okay? I think that's the gist of the Chachmei HaTzarfatim.
Their
question. So Vadai Kishechulku, tell us, read us the
story. Kishechulku Zahatata Mikom Ara and Rom Aliyah.
Meaning?
And then he acquired that entire airspace from the floor to the kind of dividing.
Yeah, and just to be precise, right, meaning the airspace, meaning the spatial area defined by the floor at the moment of sale.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a variable amount, it's fixed by the moment of the sale. Correct? Okay, yeah.
King, Nefpas Ulo, Yomer Lo, Rishus Yatalmir. I'm sorry, but this says when it sinks any amount, you should be able to say you're in my Rishus.
Exactly. So, Rishus is really just whatever's in the deed. And in this type of conception of a Miri Chin Chachmei HaTzarfatim, the deed by default is the spatial area delimited by the floor. Yeah, okay. Good. So then how do they make sense of our Gemara?
So they make a kipta that there's some sort of Tanai, that they help with the Tachon and Elin Nid, that the Elin said, wherever my, that it is a variable about, wherever my room ends up sitting, that's where I get to be. So Acha Tirtsuha, Sha'amar lo Tachon Elion, Aliyazo, Hisalka, Sakha, Hada, and if it goes up, you go up with it. Hinafta, Fosbada, if it goes down, you go down with it. Plomar, Zafa, Ba, Alpot, Sacha, Yomedos. Wherever the Aliyah is, that's where you get to reside.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think of this? Meaning, when you buy property, okay, I'm going to make this a little lumpish, right, too lumpish. But the point is, when you buy property, what's the best way to conceptualize it? The airspace defined by the like the moment of sale, or is it the physical boundaries as they change over time? See what I'm saying? So here's a way of thinking. Some people like to say they own land. Like, if you own real estate, you own land. And philosophers like to be annoying and say things like, well, you don't really own land, you own a space. Right? And of course, the land itself always changes, but like, what you really mean is that you own some area, and that gives you rights to the land within the area. Right? So the thought here is, of course, the physical boundaries are always, they're always changing, right? The earth is rotating, it's moving. So does it make sense to say that you own the whatever is demarcated by these physical boundaries as they change? Or is the point like, no, like you own the area that initially was demarcated by those boundaries? Everybody see that? What's a case where this is going to be obvious? What's like where it'll be a little more helpful? I don't know, any cases where it's kind of obvious that you want to say that the border changes as the physical thing changes? Or no?
Mountain.
What?
A mountain.
Yeah, so what's the mountain example? Yeah, so I guess the
geological time scale.
Right, so I guess something like that. So your house gets like pushed up, right? So I guess your property gets pushed up with the mountain as it grows. Yeah, that could be one example.
Well, only because you're not fighting against anyone.
Well,
only because there's no other party involved.
Right, it's just you.
That's a good example because you can't time against anyone.
Right, the house is on the mountain.
I was thinking if we lived on top of each other on the mountain, I would still say, okay, but we agreed that I would have a space, not like.
Your space is compressed on the wall, the physical wall around you.
You have houses on a treadmill, probably be the best example.
No, a good realistic example that's, easy to intuit. So, I don't know, what's a good instance where.
You own a boathouse.
Okay, and the boat's moving.
The boat arises.
Yeah, I mean, a dock house. The dock's moving on the water. Obviously, but it's not two neighbors where it's a zero sum game, right?
You share a yacht. You have the bottom part of the
yacht. You can imagine a creaky floor, right? Where like if your neighbor jumps on his floor, like the beams sag down a little bit. Do you want to say that there's a trespass, like every time the beam sag down a little bit? Probably not, right? You want to say just the property line wiggles.
That's it.
I mean, this is a real issue. Property boundaries are they're not permanent. They're not fixed things where they are just clear. They're not like physical demarcations. They change as the description in the deed changes, right? So if you say 50 meters, the property boundary is 50 meters from the tree, as the tree grows, right, that property boundary will shift, right? There's no precise way to measure it. This is why whenever you do a survey of a property, the surveyors always disagree about where the exact boundaries are. You guys familiar with this? Because there's no automatic or absolute way to define a property border. I guess here, that's what the Rishonim are debating. Assuming that these beams sag, or assuming that even the foundation moves, does the property boundary move with the foundation? Right. That's the debate in these 2 days. So that's the discussion in the Miri here. The Chachmei HaTzarfatim want to say that it's fixed by the moment of the sale. So it's a permanent, absolute property. That's the true property line. And then if the beam sag, that's a trespass. And they're saying that the case in the Gemara is a case where you made an explicit t'nai to override the true property boundary and say, look, we know that space kinds of moves or physical boundaries are fluid, so as the beam sag, the property right shifts with it, right? So the property is defined by the ground up to the beam dividing the properties, even as that beam shifts over time. Okay, so it's a variable property boundary. Okay? So if you take that Tanai, so that's the Tanai, Achetertsua, so
yeah.
You read this, right? Zakeba al kol tzad shehi omedes, meaning it's a variable property boundary. Okay, let me tovkaf.
Tovkaf kol shelo shafla me asara ulamata hatanai moed. As long as we have it sunk below 10, the tanai is still effective. Leo sakol ushuzo. Wherever the aliyah falls, that's still the aliyah's ushuzo.
Ah, meaning what? So what's the din of yud tfaf and ar gemara? It's not about a shame bias, according to Miri. What is it? Exactly. Meaning, you can make a tanai to have a variable property boundary, but not to the extent that it eviscerates your property itself. And the minimum shear of having property is 10 tefachim. I think that's a very reasonable legal principle. Right? So it's just the asara tefachim thing is just a limit on the tanai of a variable property boundary. But by default, your true property is the space demarcated by the original boundary at acquisition. Yes? Okay. I think that's a really great shita. It's a shita that's right for the Miri himself to hold. Right? But here it's not the Miri's own position. He's quoting it between the Chachmei Tzarfatim. And he actually rejects this. Why does the Miri himself reject it?
Sign doesn't appear in the Gemara.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's reading too much into the Shaka Vitaria to say that this is a case where they agreed on a fluid boundary and 10 tefachim is just the absolute minimum that you can't forfeit. My own view is that you could say, fine. My own view is what the Miri himself says. So let's see. So what's the Miri's view?
So his view is that when they did the Stam Chalukah, the Baal HaBayis did not acquire the airspace. Up until the ceiling.
Yeah. Let's see. So now we have the Miri's. So this is the Miri's Shem Chachmei Tzarfatim. I'm just going to move out of here. The Miri's own view is what? So there's no Tanai.
Yeah.
Okay. So Chulku Stam. I say, Josh, you take the upstairs, I take the downstairs. How is the property divided then?
So, She'in Lashon Zeh Amor, Elo Lemish Zofa means Hom Ara Adron Makia. So, going on the previous lines, is the formulation of you acquire all the airspace only works if you're acquiring all the airspace from the Zehom to the Makia. Ma'afa Shalom Namar, Sham Adron Aliyah. So they didn't specify, oh, I'm going to get airspace until the ceiling of the aliyah. Hol shenakosa in aliyon zakhatatim. If it's sinking, the aliyon does not infringe on tatim.
So what's his view? What's the Miri's own view?
That stan chaluka only allots 10 tatim to the all back.
Yeah, exactly. Meaning, if you want to get more than 10 tatim, buyer beware that you have to specify that you're buying the air rights up to the aliyah, up to that physical boundary. Otherwise, by default, yes, you get to populate the area below it, right? There's no concern that your neighbor's going to be floating in the air above your shus. But as a legal matter, the legal right that you have is only up till 10 tefachim. So unless somebody's invading that airspace of 10 tefachim, they have done you no wrong. Right? That's the Miri's view. Means like every contract in buying a home has to specify I'm buying the land plus the airspace up till this year. Right? So you might say it's a very limited view about what it means to own property. Like to own property is up till 10 tefachim. And as Zilti pointed out earlier, now, this is consistent with the halacha's conception of reshuyos in general. Reshus of Shabbos is up till 10 tefachim. And so the thought here is that unless you explicitly contract in ad rom aliyah, you're limited as the resident of the lower unit. So, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. He doesn't really answer, I think you talked about the end just now, but he doesn't really answer the why 10 tefachim necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think you'd have to say just like that's the halachic default for reshuyos, right? So when I buy this plot of land, I'm buying only up till 10 tefachim. Kind of strange. That would be the default. I mean, the myriads of sham contracts about them, I think, is a little more appealing in that sense. But you might say, no, it's an open question intuitively what comes along with the purchase of land, right? How much of the airspace? And if you think in terms of maybe if you have your halachic man glasses on, land only arises up till 10 tefachim, right? You have to specify, you have to explicitly contract to get above that. What it does oppose, and this is kind of what goes on in this Gemara in Bava Basra Samech Gimel, is the view that airspace comes with land. Right, so in secular law, I forget how to spell it, but it's sometimes called something along the lines of ad caelum. Like if you own property, by default you own it until the sky. Or in halacha, right, the view would be if I own property, then I own it ad rotum rakia. That's the debate with Mar Bava Basra Samech Gimel. And if you follow, so in common law, this was like a real principle. That like when you buy land or when you acquire land, you own it until the sky. And there are these great cases in the early 20th century where people were suing airlines for trespass for flying over their private land. And it posed like a real problem for courts. Like, you know, yeah, is this under common law? You own it ad toma rakia. If the Meiri is right, though, then the halacha has a much more modest conception of what it means to own karka. Right, like it doesn't come with the presumption even of going above 10 tefachim unless you somehow purchase it or have some other way of claiming that. Josh?
Does that not even matter? But are we saying in the Meiri that like you automatically acquire 10 tefachim of airspace? I was kind of thinking of it as like you only acquire the ground and it happens to be like within 10 tefachim is like basically just the ground.
Yeah, like you know, the Gemara says that for 3 tefachim of lavud, that lavud is aras michta. Right, ground itself is a fuzzy boundary. Right, so 3 tefachim is like the quantum mechanical, that's like the smallest quantum or something like that. Right, but I think 10 tefachim would be a little more generous. But that would be the idea of 10 tefachim of the Miri, which I think is very sensible. Yeah, other thoughts on this Miri Shita? Comments on this? Shmuel, sounds good to you? Yeah, Ned? Yeah, okay. Rome, you had a hand.
Why can't the, according to the Shabbatim, why can't a person agree to let his house be lower than 10
tefachim? Why can't a person agree?
I think
you probably could if you did so explicitly, but he's saying, so I think if you said, wherever the boundary is, wherever the floor goes, that's your property, then maybe you could contract that way. But if you just say, if you just use a formulation that the border is wherever the beams are, then by default there's a protection that he doesn't mean to give you his bottom 10 tefachim.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. I'm trying to think what are examples where this becomes relevant. Sure there are examples.
There's like litigation with like Sukkot of balconies in Israel. Like people have balcony and expect to be open. And like the building developer like builds 2 more stories and like no, I
yeah, something like that. That could be one type of thing. I would say also, I don't know. Let's say you have a bunk bed. Anybody grow up with a bunk bed? Yeah. So you know, let's say, or here's this. How about kick seats on planes? You know, if you could like kick the seat in front of you and like move the seat. So, which is your space versus the space of the person in front of you? So, if you push the seat, have you just expanded your zone, right? Or have you intruded upon the zone of the person in front of you? So, if you think the physical seat demarcates the area, then when you push the seat in front of you, right, the border shifts. So, when you lean the seat back, I just flew by 12 hours from Frankfurt to JFK. So like when the person first hits the recliner on their seat, do you feel like they're trespassing on your space? No? Everybody agree with me?
Yep.
Yeah. So if you think that, then you like the Tanai idea. Sorry, then you like the Miri Shantachman Sarfatim idea, which is that the border is defined by the space when you kind of step on the plane or when you purchase the seat. And then an adjustment later doesn't really reapportion the spatial rights. Whereas the Meiri saying, like, no, like, you just have your little seat and maybe like a few tefachim in each area. But of course, as the physical thing changes, the legal rights border changes as well. Maybe that's the best example I could think of. Good example, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, Romy, like that example?
Not an example, because it's an example where they intentionally don't sell space.
Right, okay.
So,
but you can see how make the proper adjustments, and that's the right type of example.
It's very important to like move the seat back with the first set you go.
Right.
Keep the expectations.
Exactly.
They don't let you do that.
By takeoff.
Yeah,
about
takeoff and landing.
Yeah.
That's
right. The seats as they are at takeoff and landing. Yeah. Okay, very good. Now, and I want to move us to, so that's the first part of the Gemara. And those are our three different ways of making sense of the Yud Tefachim standard. Then the Gemara says, Hani mili delo asnu gabi adadi, yel asnu gabi adadi sasri ubani. So the Ten Tefachim standard for compelling the top guy to vacate in the interim is only if there's no Tanai. But if there's a Tanai, then you could compel the guy on top to vacate. What's the Tanai? So what does Rashi say? So we're going to move now to the Tanai theory. To the Tanai part of the discussion. What's the Tanai? What does Rashi say? Let's see. Avalasnu adadi. Dov, what was Rashi's view about Asnu adadi?
When they originally split up.
What Tanai did they make?
That if there is this sort of collapse happens, they're going to rebuild it. It's not supposed to be completely the original
Or it doesn't say, right? But yeah, if the boundary changes, right? Meaning if the floor sags for whatever reason, then they're going to rebuild it. So if there's an explicit Tanai, which basically says that it's the border as fixed at the time of the sale, right? Then the parties are locked into that. Okay. Now this is a pretty surprising view. Because of the Gemara's continuation. So what does the Gemara say? Aval asnu adadi sasri ubanu. Now you would think that means what? What do you think that means? So at the time of sale, time to when the border was here. They made it tonight that if the border changes, then they have to rebuild. But the Gemara says, v'chiasnu bahade adadi ad kama. Meaning what? Even when they made a Tanai, how much of a trespass is sufficient to compel action, to compel the top guy to evacuate? So does everybody see the issue? So what's surprising is that you might say if they made a Tanai, if the boundary deviates, then any deviation is grounds to evict the top guy. But the Gemara says no. The Gemara says, if they made a Tanai, it's got to be a significant deviation, right? Ad kama. How significant of a deviation? So what does the Gemara say here? Dov, take us through the Gemara's three views. So where does that come from?
The Mishnah in the sixth parak about how the height of the house is being the edge of between the rabban rosh and the kohen, depending on
And what's the makar for this arko ke chatzi arko v'chatzi rocha? The heichal, right? Or it seems to be the heichal, which is the Gemara's standard later on for if I say I'm going to build a house stam without specifying the dimensions, what's the default dimension for height? Okay. So the thought here is, look, even if the border sags a little bit, that's not a grounds to redo the construction. The border has to sag such that the bias on bottom no longer meets the standard of the height being half the width plus length. Okay? Why should that be the standard? So, is everybody with me? So, the Gemara is saying here that when they made a Tanai, that if the border sags, they'll knock the whole thing down and rebuild. How much of the sagging is considered sagging? Okay? So Rashi says, the Gemara is ad kama tashpil ha'aliyah v'yachuf eser elyon listar v'livnos. So I think we could all agree that a minuscule sagging is not actionable, right? Things are moving all the time. So centimeter sagging is probably not, inch probably not actionable. When is it actionable? Oh, if you no longer have the dimensions that the height is 1/2 of the width plus length. Yes? Where does this half width plus length come from? The heichal. And the Gemara later on says, oh, if I tell you I'm going to build you a house, the default dimensions are the dimensions that the height dimension has to be the proportion of height in the Beis HaMikdash to the length and width. Okay? Normal? Is that a normal standard for dimensions? No! Right? It's a very strange standard for what the dimensions of normal homes should be, right? And the Gemara seems to object to that here. Yes, Dov? Yeah, I mean, don't say silly things in the name of Rav Nachman, meaning that's a ridiculous standard to apply to a house. Right? And actually, if you look at the Gemara later on, where this issue comes up, this is the Gemara on here. I think I added this to the source sheet. Here. This is the Gemara in Sadi Chesem Abiz. If you say you're going to sell a house to your friend, you don't specify the height. Romo's got to be kachatzi arko kachatzi rochvo raila davar kibinan ahechel. Okay, and the Gemara actually has two deos whether that's a normal source or a non-normal source. Right, one view is that of course we look to the Beis HaMikdash as the standard architectural model, and the other view is how could you compare anything to the Beis HaMikdash that had special height to make the building especially special. Now, actually, this is something that happens not infrequently in the Gemara. We'll see some examples of this later on, where the Gemara says, what's the default rule in case X? And the Gemara says, oh, we find in the Torah a pasuk that says this, and that's why it's the default rule. Like what's going on here. How do you make sense of that in this case? Do you think, if I pushed you a little bit to explain this, what would you say is the explanation? Josh?
Say there's no real answer for what the default has to be, so we search for anything like within any realm of like the halachic system to give us a pointer, and we just take the first thing we see.
Maybe that's a very weak way of saying it. Yeah, that's one way of saying it. I would say a little more because you say why should we search for anything? I would say like the sam das maybe, or like when two people talk and there's no, so you know, like the famous example, if I say I'll meet you in New York City. I don't specify a time or location. Like, where am I suggesting to meet you?
MSG, Friday, 8 p.m.
No.
No.
Grand Central at the clock.
Grand Central. Yeah, Grand Central Station at 12 o'clock. That's usually that's also like the focal point of like Stan. I don't know where most people are. If there's one convergence point, like in the city, it's like that's the convergence point. Even though most people don't meet there, but. Like, what's the, if you think of like a Stam Das of a meeting point, that's the convergence point. How about it? It's supposed to be like your average together, like where people are in the city. Like, the most people end up converging at Grand Central Station. I don't know why 12 o'clock, but maybe for people who make meetings. So maybe you could say, along Josh's line of thought, that if you don't specify, so there's like, there's no specifications, oh, the Stam Das of like Jews is like the focal point of the Torah. It's like, what does the Torah ever say about height? It's look to the Mishkan. I guess that's a nice way of thinking about it. No? Everybody sympathetic? No, Josh, you don't like that?
their DOS isn't thinking about like what some Musk says about height.
Your DOS is not thinking.
Mine is not.
It's like, what's the basis of the our common agreements and system of laws? The Torah, no? I think of this, you know, it's like in English language, if you have a disagreement about the meaning of the word, you know, where do you go? You go to like Shakespeare and Dickens to see how they used it. Like in the Torah, if there's a meaning of the word, you go to the Tanakh, right? Same here. If you have a vagueness in an agreement, you disambiguate it through the Torah. No one's inspired by this, no?
It's not the Torah's definitions of the dimensions of a home.
Well, but in the absence of specifying anything else, you say, oh, let's look to the Torah to disambiguate. Like that, this is the only disambiguation there is. I'll give you another example. In Bava Metzia, the Gemara says, if I hire you, remember this from last year. Yeah, if I hire you as a worker and I don't specify the hours, the Gemara finds a pasuk in Tehillim where it talks about workers going out at sunrise and coming home at sunset. As like, now the Gemara says that's only applicable if there's no minna. If there's no minna, then you can say, oh, the Stam Das is like the way the Torah, you know, talks about it in some place or other.
But again, it's not the Torah talking about home, like the Torah. Yeah, the Torah talks about the hours of.
But then you come to Josh's point, like when you have nowhere else, nothing else to. Like it's not like if the Torah had explicated somewhere else in Mishpatim, right? V'chinatzu nanashim, and they're fighting over the dimensions of a home. By the way, here's what the dimensions are. If you had that, great. But if you don't have that, then you go to the next best thing. No?
Other building.
So first of all, I'm not sure I would walk around characterizing the base of Mikdash as like a building.
I just tried to get out of that.
Okay, but that's the two deos in, you know, Tzadi Ches. And that's the, you know, the Havamina and Maskana in our Sugya. Don't say empty things in the name of, who is it?
Rav Nachman.
I thought
you were going to say the idea that we shall model our homes to be like
Mikdash. No, that's way too soft for me to suggest. But I think that's one way of making sense of it. The other way of making sense of it is what? Different theory? Unless you go Romy's seminary way. I'm just kidding.
I thought you were going to say that.
It's another way of... What's that, Ned?
I missed
the
joke.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a joke. I don't know why people laughed at that. Bunch of chauvinists in the room. So what's another way of thinking about it? Tzchariah?
Yeah, I mean, like, the question at hand is, when we don't specify what's our communal default, and they can just be like asserting that point that, you know, the communal default is these sorts of proportions. And like as a remez, they're saying, oh, it's actually worked out the same thing as the
AFL. Yeah, that would be a strange coincidence though, right? Like why? So, Zolti?
No, it's something symbolic about a house being represented in the AFL in some way.
It's exactly what Romy just said, no? I think that's what Romy just said. A little disturbed that two of you independently came with that theory on your own. Everyone's looking for like drashos for Sheva Brachos. I would say a little differently. Benji.
You just say that, meaning maybe that the Heichal really is just like a normal room, and all rooms are kind of this dimension.
Yeah, so I would say it slightly differently, but in that direction, meaning the Heichal itself represents, I guess, what the Torah sees as the ideal ratio of height to length and width. I mean, it's just a default architectural design. And how did the Torah specify? What was the Torah's default for building construction? It was this. Oh, because that default reflects, I guess, what is a reasonable default elsewhere. Right? So, Benji, that's the thought. Does everybody see that? So same in the length of the workday thing. You could say, we're not going to this default because the Torah has that in a certain place. Rather, the Torah has that in a certain place because that's the assumed default. Yes? Yeah. That would be two ways of making sense of what the Gemara is doing here. And that makes sense of the why it's, you know, Shaka Vitaria and Ar Sigya, and also the two deos that you get in Tzadi Ches. Did everybody see that Sigya in Tzadi Ches, or nobody got a chance to see it yet? I'll say that Mishnah in Tzadi Ches says a default home, the height is expected to be half the length plus half the width plus length. And the Gemara says, Raya ledavar kebinyan ahechol. And the Gemara has two deos over here on Tzadichas, whether that Raya ledavar is an accepted Raya, or that's like an absurd Raya. Meaning, is Rashbag thinking that's a silly source, or is Rashbag saying that's a good Raya ledavar? Okay. So that's one suggestion in our Gemara. Our Gemara seems to walk away from that when it says, don't say empty things in the name of Rav Nachman. Okay? So the Gemara quickly moves away from that. So the Gemara says the sagging is not actionable at the Beis HaMikdash length. Right, so what is the invasion amount at which it's actionable according to the Gemara? So let's go back to our Gemara in Daf Zion. Hachi Amar Rav Nachman. What's the standard at which you could sue the guy upstairs to leave?
Very interesting, as people live.
Yeah.
So just to be more explicit, we have the Heichal suggestion, and we have two explanations to explain why the Heichal thing might be apt. And then Gemara has the third thing, Kivadairi Inchi. Now I think that is the most sensible standard, right? At what point can you sue the guy upstairs to do repairs when the guy downstairs is deprived of what type of living space?
Normal living space.
Normal living space, right? Which is just probably the best standard that you could appeal to. What's normal in society? In fact, the Gemara itself goes a little deeper, digs a little deeper, and says, Vekama. What's Kididairi Inchi? So it gives us what's, I guess, some current events in Machoza. What were the current events in Machoza? And what's that?
Normal sized house being bring it in and out.
Yeah, so a person who's going to and from the marketplace, and Mahoza is carrying his goods on his head. Rashi says, Chavilos Chanim Arukin, he's carrying stuff on his shoulders, so that he could get into the house and turn around, and that beam, those beams or those sticks that he's carrying aren't going to crash into the floor upstairs. Yes? Phil?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Ritva here is very quick to point out very sensibly. What does the Ritva say in Asirusa de Machoza? Ned, did you see it? No? Ezra, did you see this Ritva? Kobe, did you see the Ritva? You probably did. Yeah? No, you didn't see it? Eitan, did you see the Ritva?
Oh, yeah, I knew
you saw it.
Yeah.
You shook your head no too quickly for it to have been like a true answer.
Right, so the point is, it's just at that time, right? Just at that time, that's what like the normal thing was. But really, it's like the ability to carry all your stuff in your house. Like,
yeah. So, like, what's normal? I would say for a person, for a normal height of a home, and that's the Kididairi Inchi. And then when if the floor sags below that amount of what's normal, then you can sue the guy on top to vacate, which I think is a very, very reasonable standard. And that's how the Ritva defines Kididairi Inchi. So the thought here, just to put it back into perspective of the Gemara, is that even if there's some physical intrusion into, you made a tanai, that if this floor sags, then you'll rebuild, it's only if the sagging is significant enough to deprive you of Kididairi Inchi that you can see the guy on top to vacate. Otherwise, you're not entitled to intrude on his ability to live in his quarters. That's how the Gemara divides up the rights between the guy upstairs and the guy downstairs. Okay? Romy, you have a hand on this?
Well, is there a difference between, like, according to Richard, there's just a difference between the last two answers? Or it's the same?
The last two being...
meaning it's not actually doing
it. It's an explication of it.
Right.
Yeah, Vikama is what is Kididairi Inchi.
Right.
And the Gemara is just saying, oh, nowadays, this is what it would look like. Right, so I guess in America today we would say, what's the average height of a normal apartment? I don't know, what would you say, 10 feet? 8 feet? I guess, yeah, we'd look around, see if it's 10 feet or 8 feet, and that would be the, if the wall, if the floor sags below that, then you could sue the guy upstairs to do new construction. Yeah. Okay. So that's the basic background discussion that we've shown him. I think it's still an open question whether the Gemara is working through the paradigm of Mazik, Shechinim, or Geneva, right? The Gemara doesn't tell us exactly what the legal basis for evicting the top guy is, but there's one way to maybe try to shed light on that, and that is through the Ramban's three deos about who is bearing the costs of the repairs. So let's assume now all this is about what threshold of trespass or invasion of the downstairs is grounds for the guy downstairs to evict the guy upstairs to do construction. But who has to pay for the construction? So who saw the Ramban? Josh, do you see the Ramban? No, is that a Kobe head nod or?
No.
No? Was that a Kobe head nod? The second one? No. Okay. Nine, you saw it? What?
Yeah.
Okay. So what does the Ramban say? Take us through these. Igaman Damar. Yeah. So what's that first view?
So that the person upper story is obligated.
Yeah. So the guy, the whole discussion of the Gemara here, if the top floor invades the legitimate airspace of the guy downstairs, is about the guy upstairs having to foot the bill. Yes? Why in the world would the guy upstairs have to foot the bill for the downstairs guy's property? Meaning what? So what does the Chazon Ish say to explain this? Yeah, exactly. Meaning the reason why the cost would be imposed on the guy upstairs would have to be a theory of mazik. Because why else would the burden be imposed on the upstairs guy exclusively? Yes, Ed? So we're viewing him as a mazik, maybe also as a ganav or something. And so he has the duty of repair. Right? He's mazik, the guy downstairs. That's how the Chazon Ish makes sense of the first day in the Ramban. What's the second day in the Ramban? Migaman Damar. Yeah. So actually, the whole discussion of the Gemara is about the guy downstairs putting the bill. Remember, that was the suggestion in the beginning of the Gemara. The guy downstairs said, I'll pay for it all. So it's about the guy downstairs putting the bill. What then is this debate about? Exactly. Just about defeating the guy upstairs' claim that he should be allowed to stay in his residence. Right? So this is all about just getting the eviction, the temporary eviction, to be allowed to demolish his property in the interim. But of course the cost is imposed on the guy downstairs, since it's his unit that really needs repairs. Okay? Understood that way, this is purely a Shechinim type of halakha. Because the legal issue at bar here is just, when could you impose a burden on the guy upstairs to do the necessary construction that you have to do for your own property? Does everybody see that? It's clearly not a Nezek issue. It's not a trespass issue. This is just about when two neighbors are mutually reliant on each other, because the downstairs can't be fixed without rebuilding the upstairs. And of course, the upstairs has to be taken down to repair the downstairs. That's a Shechinim issue. What are the rights that neighbors have against each other? Yeah? Okay. There's a third day in the Ramban. What's the Ramban's preferred view? Yeah. So why would they divide the costs? What's this view? So why would they have to split? So they're each have to bear 50% of the repairs. Why would they have to divide the costs?
That might just be part of the shutfin.
Yeah, something like their shutfin in this building, and so the Gemara is trying to figure out when a repair is necessary, but once repairs are necessary, the repairs are imposed equally on both of them.
Maintenance fee,
yeah, something like a maintenance fee thing. Josh?
Can you argue differently that it's mazik, but it's more equitable consideration? It's not the guy's fault that his thing, like, when, you know, it's not his fault, but they're not going to compare everything.
Yeah, I guess that's a possibility. But I would say, like, if he pshuto, the point is there are shutzfin in this binyan. One gets upstairs, one gets downstairs. And so the costs are imposed evenly on both of them.
Maybe for the ending taina there, where, like, while Elias says, oh, I should really only pay for the first 10, and I say, no, I'll hold the tara for bun. Since you've already gone to effort to contribute something, Bill will pay for all the bias.
Like, yeah.
Or they like, split all the bias.
So it's Ivaniach alomar lo tarachna velo banina. Elakadesha tagbiana lamala measara. May I only pay for you to get up to 10, right? Why should I have to chip in for you to get all the way up?
So, since he's already being Torah, or already being Matriachim, he has to build.
Yeah. What? Well, yeah, once we're already working.
Yeah, some sort of a Gilgal,
Yeah, or I would say that the point here is that once you have the responsibility, then...
It's once you've already been down. I mean, the issue, the problem is that you're evacuating the premises. You've already evacuated the premises, so you might as well have to...
Yes, then it's really an inertia argument. Meaning, I guess the whole argument of the guy upstairs is I don't want to move out, but the thought is once you're moved out already, it's the same tircha to be moved out for an extra 10 days as it is for 2 days.
I mean, he's paying for more expenses, also.
Right, so I think Ned's reading this line as lo tarachna. It's really about the tircha argument, not about the costs. Lo tarachna velo banina ela kadesha tagbiena lamala measara velo etrach ache tagia kol tzarkach. I think it's really about the tircha, not about... Like, the cost maybe he'd have to bear anyway. Mm-hmm. But he's saying, why should I have to be living outside of my house for longer time? But the point is, no, like, you have a duty to restore it to the status quo ante. Yeah. Okay. Any thoughts on this? So let me just say what I think. So that's a quick survey of this nice little case in the Gemara. You'll see this, I think, is just a nice exemplum of the collective action Rashon Kofin B'nei Ha'ir Zez Libnos Beishar V'Deles. So here, in this case, the question is between two parties, you know, when could the guy downstairs force the guy upstairs to cooperate? And Gemara tries to speak about a certain level of invasion of his home. That's when he could force him to move out. Here, too, you have this open question about what exactly the paradigm is, the type of Nezek, or is it a principle of Shechinim? But then Gemara is trying to figure out how do you allocate the rights and duties between these two neighbors who share a bias on Aliyah. What the Gemara is going to move into, starting on the Mishnah and Daf Zayin on the base, is this type of question for a whole city or a whole chatzer. Meaning, given that the town as a whole has certain needs, or even given that one member of the town has certain needs, but he can only achieve that through other people chipping in or sacrificing something. Like in this case where the tikkun of the tatoi is dependent on the evacuation of the light. So when is the halacha going to impose a burden on another actor to satisfy the needs of the first actor? And that's that type of shchinin, certainly the shchinin paradigm, is what's going to be at work in the Gemara's analysis of Kofin Zez Elevenos Beishar V'Dalas. Okay, so that's going to be our next major sugya. I want us to think of it in terms of the easiest paradigm is tax policy, taxing a community in order to provide the public goods that everybody benefits from. So what are the types of arguments that the Gemara adduces to explain why the ear could impose the taxes on its constituents? And who's exempt from the taxes? I will see Tamir Chachamim, Yisomim, maybe. But also, more importantly, what's the criteria that the Gemara leans on as the thing that legitimizes the taxation? So at one point, the Gemara says something about Hana. I don't know if anybody got that far yet. So keep an eye open for those types of rationales. All right? Any other comments on the Eloi Tatoi case? Sakharya?
I thought the Saman Nesivos was an interesting kind of whole thing.
Yeah, in the Shulchan Aruch. In Siman Kuf Samach Daled.
Yeah, so the Smas kind of said like the formulation. So it said that the Tofasar Tvachim Yashav Shtame Sham Klal, where it's sort of like the problem is that the bottom guy has no usage of his own place. And then the Nesivos, claiming that he's quoting the Sma, gives kind of the different angle. The Tofasar Tvachim Rishos HaTachim.
Yeah.
Like an invasion startup. Which kind of made no one wonder, like, is this entire Nafkamina, this entire, like, conceptual distinction, at least Quentin Siebel, just kind of moot? It's like, not really Nafkamina.
But, so let's say.
Just complacent, I'm saying.
Yeah. So does everybody see the point that Zachariah is making here? This is the Sma and the Nesivos explaining the Gemara's view that if the Elyon dips into the Tachton below 10 Fahim, the Tachton has recourse to the Elyon. Right? So there are two explanations here of the significance of Asara Tvachim. The way that the Sma has it is that if the roof goes below 10 Tvachim, then you can't use your Rishos. So I think that's a non... So that the thought there, the way I would say it, is that the thing you own is the land. Right? So you own the bottom. But obviously if you own the bottom, you have to be able to use it normally. The trespass or the invasion limits your ability to use your land. It's almost like in Hezekiah, like you're not able to get the private use stick of the dimension of your land. Whereas the way that Nesivos has it, is that your land ownership itself extends at least into the airspace of 10-5. Right, like Josh was saying, maybe for similar to Lovewood type example, your property ownership actually rises 10 foot above the ground. And that's the reason why you could... It's like a trespass type idea. He's actually invading your property, so you could evict him. As opposed to the Sma, who seems to be thinking, he's not invading your property, but his infringement limits what you could do in your property. What could his land if he can't at least get 10 foot of use out of it? Does everybody see the difference? Yeah? There may not be a clear nafkamina. But certainly, conceptually, they seem to be appealing to different rationales. Yeah, thoughts on that? Benji, looks like you have something to say.
The only thing that I'm curious about is that if you say that that what he's doing is he's like trespassing on your land, would you then say that really like the bottom floor of his property is now your property?
Yeah, arguably. So the thought is,
if you have this type of situation, so this whole thing is 10 tefachim, right?
Right.
And then this sags over here.
Right.
So you're saying now, actually the tachton owns this area.
Right. Like, can he go to the Elyon, like, I don't know, take a nap on his porch?
Yeah.
Because really that's
right.
His property.
I think so. That's a great, so it's hard, you have your nafkamina. Right, so the nafkamina that Benji is giving us is that if you take the argument of the Nesivos, then the Tachton actually has a property right to the space above the sagging floor. So if there's an aveda that falls in here, or if a woman owns it and a get is given over here, then it's all her shows, right? But if it's the argument of the Sma, then the thought is what you own is just literally the karka, and then you have shimush rights, you know, generally speaking, for that amount. But if this the top floor sags in, that is the ownership, or it's owned by the audio. I think that's beautiful enough for me not to your question. Do you agree? Yeah, great. Thank you.
Highlight of the day. Okay, shkoyach, guys. We'll stop here. We'll daven mincha, and then Thursday we'll start with the Mishnah on Daf Zayin.